Chapter 9. The roar of the gunshot was deafening, and the muzzle flash was blinding. But the bullet went over Frank Hardy's head. The instant he saw the gun swinging his way, he threw himself to the floor. Then he scrambled up and ducked behind one of the benches as the gray man sent a second shot, then a third his way. Bullets tore through the wood of the old pews.
"You might as well give up, Hardy,"
said the gray man.
"Vanessa Bender, Kelly Shaw, and by dawn, your brother. Our plans are set. There is no way out for you."
As soon as Frank heard the voice, he paused in his crouching progress. That wasn't the gray man speaking. The intelligence agent had a distinctive voice, and Frank always recognized it. A chill passed through Frank's body as he realized that the assassins had created a clone of the government agent. Frank had come to the Lazarus Clinic looking for doubles. Now he realized he'd found much more than he bargained for. The clone of the late Al Rosasa and one of the gray man. Of course, this discovery wouldn't mean much if he got killed in the next few minutes. He had to get past this phony gray man and out one of the chapel windows. And he had to do it immediately. He could hear voices in the corridor behind him. Holding his breath, Frank took his flashlight and tossed it across the chapel aisle toward the other pews. The flashlight clattered along one pew, and Frank heard bullets splintering the wood as the gray man fired in the direction of the sound. Then Frank rose, picking up the long wooden bench as he stood up. Straining every muscle, he lifted the pew and hurled it at the gunman. The phony agent had been aiming in the wrong direction. Now, as he turned the gun on Frank, the pew smashed into him, knocking him flat. Frank broke into motion, dashing across the floor and diving out of one of the broken windows. And not a moment too soon, he thought. He heard a roar of angry voices in the chapel. His pursuers had arrived. Frank zigzagged across a garden overgrown with weeds and brambles. He was on the opposite end of the complex from the spot where he'd left his car. Doubling back was out of the question. Turning briefly, he saw a group of men, 8 to 10 he guessed, coming out of the chapel. Ahead was a cyclone fence, and beyond that, forest. Frank ducked behind a row of bushes, then ran for the barrier. Fierce Maine winters and spring thaws had undermined several of the fence posts, causing the wire mesh to sag deeply. In one place, the fence was almost down, and Frank scrambled over it. Behind him, he heard a cry. He had been spotted, he thought, not daring to look back. The chase was on. Running through a forest with only moonlight to guide him, and no weapon bigger than a pocket knife, was not Frank Hardy's idea of fun. Unseen branches whipped at his face, and he could make out tree trunks only as darker portions of shadow among other shadows. Frank was running so fast that he didn't discover the 10-foot-deep gully until he went tumbling down into it. By the time he scrambled up the other side, he was battered and bruised, his clothes were torn, and his flashlight was gone. Behind him, he could see the little glowing spots of light that indicated his pursuers' positions. "So long as they keep those flashlights on, I've got a chance," Frank thought. "At least I'll know where they are." The terrorist behind him assumed the usual hunting formation. "Whether it's deer or a man, the system is the same," Frank thought. From the positions of the flashlight's beams, he could tell most of the pursuers had joined together in a skirmish line, heading straight into the woods. They were supposed to drive him forward, herding him. The men on the edges of the line would push faster into the forest, trying to cut off his retreat. In the end, the wingmen would meet as the line became a circle. Then they'd close in to finish him. Frank shivered at the thought. The problem was, he'd never outrun his pursuers while they had flashlights, and he didn't. Off to the side, he heard someone crashing through the underbrush and briefly saw the beam from a flashlight. If he could get that flashlight, Frank thought, he would have a fair chance of escaping his pursuers. He dashed ahead of the skirmish line until he found a big oak, its leaves mostly shed, with bramble bushes close by. Frank scrambled up the trunk, picked a sturdy branch, and climbed out on it until he was over a bush. Reaching down, Frank grabbed one of the upper branches of the bush and shook it vigorously. Branches vibrated together, and dead leaves fell, making enough noise to ensure his pursuer would head in that direction. Frank gave another shake, and another. He saw the beam of the flashlight coming closer. Now Frank could make out the person behind it, the fake gray man, blundering through the forest in a trench coat. The man kept getting stuck on bushes, then having to free himself. Frank tried one final shake of the bush. The light moved that way, and Frank froze. The untrained tracker kept his beam at ground level. Frank waited until the imposter was almost directly under his branch. Then he jumped. He landed on the man's shoulders, knocking him down into a pile of damp leaves. They slipped and spun for a couple of seconds, the gray man clone trying to get his gun into position. In the struggle, the flashlight rolled away. Fighting by feel and with great good luck, Frank managed to land a blow to the side of his opponent's head. The double went limp. Frank rose to his feet and looked for the flashlight. There it was, still throwing a beam, after having rolled under one of the nearby bramble branches. Frank held the long branch aside and stooped down to reach for the flashlight with his other hand. Just as his fingers closed on the metal tube, he heard movement. Frank turned to find the false gray man on his knees right behind him, gun in hand. Frank ducked and let go of the thorny branch. It snapped back right into the gunman's face. He screamed. Frank grabbed a rock, leapt on the man, and knocked him out.
Joseph!
A voice called out of the darkness.
What's wrong?
Thorns!
Frank called back, hoping his gray man voice would sound convincing in a one-word answer. He grinned. It was even the truth. Frank picked up the flashlight and angled away from the hunters, falling farther and farther back as they moved to encircle the area where they supposed him to be. Soon enough, Joseph, the gray man double, was going to wake up. Before that happened, Frank knew he would have to disappear. He gave himself another couple of minutes traveling with the aid of the flashlight. Then he turned it off and, moving quietly as he could, headed directly away from the area of the search. By going cross-country, he knew he had a decent chance of reaching the main highway that cut through that part of the state. Frank found a track through the forest and set off at a jog. He hadn't gone very far when he heard yelling in the distance. Joseph must have made his report, Frank thought. One man began shouting orders. Frank turned. The lights of the pursuers abruptly winked out. Now Frank knew he wouldn't be able to tell where his pursuers were. But they couldn't see where they were going, either. If he heard rustling in the woods, he'd have to get away from it. If they heard rustling, they'd probably shoot. But they might be shooting one of their own people. Frank found a clearing in the woods and stopped for a second to estimate his position from the moon. If he kept in this direction, he thought, he should come upon the highway. He ran as fast as he could across the open space. He knew that if anybody came on him now, he'd make a wonderful target. He safely reached the far side of the clearing and discovered that the track continued there, but it began to curve away from the direction Frank had to follow. He pushed off into the woods again, dodging into a stand of ancient pines. The darkness under the trees was profound, their interwoven boughs keeping out the moonlight. There were no brambles or blackberry bushes to blunder into, but to Frank's ears, his rustling progress through the dried fallen needles might as well have been a brass band announcing his position. Pine needles gave way to a rocky hillside, and Frank scrambled down, doing his best to stay under cover. When he was hidden in the shadows of a small valley, he paused to glance back. The moon's eerie orange radiance spotlit several men as they began descending the rocks. They must have found the pathway too, Frank thought. He had no choice now but to climb up the other side of the valley. Knowing he would probably be seen, he started up the hilly area. Shouting behind him told him he'd been right. His pursuers had spotted him. Looks like I've had it, he thought. But as he reached the summit, he found himself overlooking the highway. He could see headlights moving along the winding road. The highway seemed to have been cut through a hilly area, and the way down to the road was very steep. There was only one thing to do, Frank thought. In a rattle of loose rocks, he sent himself tobogganing down the slope toward the road. He flew along patches of bare rock, starting a little landslide of gravel. He knew that he had to keep himself from going into a tumble, or else he was in danger of breaking an arm. Or his neck. Luckily, the slope evened out toward the bottom. Frank snatched at bushes and vines to stop his rate of descent. He rolled to an ungraceful stop right on the shoulder of the road. He knew that his pursuers must have reached the hilltop by now. Would they risk the slide down, he wondered. Just then he saw the headlights of a light, open-bed truck, which was laboring up the gradient. Frank took cover behind some roadside brush. As the headlights came past him, Frank darted out. He realized that, for a few seconds, he'd be silhouetted against the truck's taillights. If his pursuers had a real marksman at the top of the hill... He leapt for the rear of the truck. Made it! The moon disappeared behind the hills, and the truck rolled onward. When it pulled into a rest stop, Frank hopped off. He went into the diner, dug through his pockets for change, and called home. There was no answer. This is bad, Frank thought. Joe is in danger, and I can't warn him about what's going on. He had turned from the phone in despair when a bearded, cheerful-looking man stopped on the way back from the restroom.
Gosh almighty,
the man said, staring at Frank.
You been out wrestling bears, son?
Frank looked down at his torn and dirty clothing.
Something like that,
Frank said. The man shook his head.
You look like someone who could use some help. My problem is that I have to get to the local airport,
Frank said.
I have a plane waiting there for me.
The man grinned.
Well, it sounds like times have changed since my days on the road. You sure you don't need some money?
Thanks, Frank said.
All I need is a lift to the airport.
Still smiling, the man said.
Come on then,
and walked outside to his car. Frank was grateful that the man asked no questions as he drove. They arrived at the airport to find the plane Frank had chartered in Bayport, all gassed up and ready to go, just as he'd arranged on landing. Frank would always remember the man's dumbfounded look when they rolled out to the plane. After thanking the stranger, Frank got into the plane. He noticed that the man was still standing there, watching. Frank waved. Poor man probably thinks I'm a high-tech hobo or a very weird millionaire. Once he was in the air, Frank groaned. It was almost 1:30. He was tired, and now he had the leisure to feel his bruises. And since he wasn't running for his life, he had time to think about the terrible events at the Lazarus Clinic. Obviously, the clone makers were back at work. But why had they made a clone of the Gray Man? Were the assassins planning on infiltrating the network? It was definitely a possibility, Frank thought. Their double of the Gray Man could even give false testimony at the trial. Frank had a sinking feeling in the pit of his stomach. The real network agent might be out of the game permanently. Had the man he talked with on the phone earlier been the real thing, or the assassin copy, luring him up to the Lazarus Clinic? Frank didn't know. He did know one thing, however. The assassins had killed Vanessa Bender and Callie Shaw. Frank looked out the cockpit at the starlit sky, forcing back the emotions that threatened to overwhelm him. I promise you this, Callie, he vowed silently. Whoever killed you, I'll get them. I'll make them pay. Whatever it takes. End of chapter.